With less than a week to go before the midterms, election officials across the country are bracing for potential problems, including intimidation and threats to voters and poll workers.
Midterms don't inspire quite the same enthusiasm as presidential elections. But yeah, I mean, this political violence in this country is something that is causing quite a lot of alarm on the federal and state level.
And why the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve are sending different messages. Plus, are you missing Slack notifications from coworkers? We've got some tips. It's Thursday, November 3rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The Bank of England has raised its key interest rate by 0.75 percentage point, bringing the benchmark lending rate to its highest level since 1989. But the bank signaled that it doesn't expect to raise rates as much as investors had anticipated. The move comes a day after the Federal Reserve also raised its key rate by 0.75 percentage point. The Fed signaled that it plans to continue raising rates, possibly in smaller increments, but to higher levels than previously anticipated, in contrast to the Bank of England. Reporter Paul Hannon explains.
That divergence in expected paths basically reflects a difference in the economic outlook. Bank officials, the governor, Andrew Bailey, for example, made it clear that the shock from the war in Ukraine, that the surge in gas prices here has made the outlook for the UK economy much darker. So a recession here is inevitable. According to the bank, it's actually underway right now. Whereas in the US, this is still an open question. It's not clear to the Fed or to most economists whether the US is actually going to face a recession or not.
The pound weakened against the dollar after the Bank of England's announcement today, trading 1.9% lower, and UK government bonds sold off. Amazon is pausing corporate hiring and plans to keep the freeze in place for months. The e-commerce giant signaled in its last earnings report that projected sales for the fourth quarter could be far lower than expected amid continuing economic uncertainty. Last month, Amazon halted hiring in its core retail division through the end of the year, but the company has been staffing up at its warehouses in preparation for the busy holiday season. Also in response to economic conditions, ride-hailing company Lyft announced today that it's cutting 13% of staff, or nearly 700 jobs. In May, the company announced plans to slow hiring and reduce costs. Rival Uber had also announced plans to slow hiring in May. Both have struggled with driver shortages that have pushed fares up for riders. In Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu makes a big political comeback, with vote results showing he has a decisive victory in the country's fifth election in less than 4 years. Shandy Race, our deputy bureau chief for the Middle East, has the details.
Netanyahu was able to do what his opponent Yair Lapid was not able to do, which is unite a group of smaller right-wing parties to run as one party. In the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, parties have to reach a minimum threshold of votes in order to get in. So by uniting this group of parties, he made sure that his allies got into the Knesset. Yair Lapid, the current prime minister, was not able to unite a bunch of left-wing and Arab parties. They ran separately, and two of those parties didn't make it into the parliament.
That meant Lapid didn't have enough votes to form a coalition, giving Netanyahu, whose past terms make him Israel's longest-serving prime minister, another shot at the role. And Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant has been disconnected from the power grid after Russian shelling damaged transmission lines. That left the facility reliant on diesel generators running on about 15 days' worth of fuel. This is the third time the nuclear power plant has been knocked out by Russian attacks in as many months, raising concerns over the safety of the plant as fighting continues in eastern and southern Ukraine. Coming up, U.S. election officials confront challenges as they prepare for the midterms. We'll talk about how states are getting ready after the break. On Wednesday night, President Biden gave a speech on democracy, condemning political violence.
My fellow Americans, we're facing a defining moment. An inflection point. We must, with one overwhelming, unified voice, speak as a country and say there's no place for voter intimidation or political violence in America.
And with just days to go before the midterms, election and law enforcement officials across the country are working to ensure security at polling sites. Joining me now to talk about how they're preparing and the challenges they're facing is Wall Street Journal legal affairs reporter Jan Wolf. Hi, Jan. Thanks for being here.
Hi. No problem.
So, Jan, this really caught my eye in your story. Republican officials in Maricopa County in Arizona issued a statement saying the following, quote, "Don't dress in body armor to intimidate voters as they are legally returning their ballots." Jan, what prompted this? Tell us the story here.
So in Arizona, there have been some organizations that decided they would monitor ballot drop boxes. These are like conservative groups that think that there's voter fraud in the election. And what they did is, you know, they set up, you know, a stakeout, and some of them were armed and in body armor. And so, you know, you had Arizona officials, including Republicans, say this goes too far and this is intimidating people, especially because some of the activists, according to voters, were monitoring people, like taking photos of their license plates, following them, that sort of thing. And it produced a court case, which actually raised some interesting First Amendment issues, ended in a temporary restraining order that really curtailed this sort of monitoring.
Tell us more about how broader issues or questions about election integrity are playing into all of this.
Well, Trump said the election was stolen from him. His own attorney general rejected that. You know, Trump lost every court case. Despite that, we've seen some Republicans adopt this rhetoric and make this a campaign issue. And, you know, we've seen a lot of election workers who were used to toiling, you know, kind of like in more obscurity, are now just dealing with a, you know, a backdrop of what they call harassment. You know, that's raised a lot of concern, obviously, around the country. There's obviously a right for people to want to watch our elections and make sure everything's above the board. But, you know, once it crosses into threats and harassment, that's a real problem for democracy. And we're seeing election workers just citing burnout and just quitting their jobs in sort of a mass exodus. And that's caused a lot of concern. You know, one thing that is encouraging is occasionally you have somebody come to an election office and say, you know, I'm really skeptical. I think there's voter fraud going on here. They volunteer, or they, you know, become involved, they watch what's going on, and they realize it is above the board. So occasionally you hear stories like that, and, you know, that is reassuring.
What else can you tell us about how preparations are going on the national level?
We have seen election offices focus on just ensuring their workers are safe, you know, putting resources into having security guards in certain places, cameras rolling, that sort of thing, trying to, you know, keep the workers safe so they can do their job. What is troubling is the people who have just quit these jobs because they're getting death threats or whatever. They say, you know, this isn't worth it to me. I didn't get involved in this for the money. I wanted to do a good thing, and now I'm afraid for my life. The people who are doing these jobs are, you know, a lot of them are doing their best to provide transparency and reassure people. They want partisans involved in a sense, right? Like, think about it this way. If Republicans are poll watching and seeing what's happening, and they're realizing it's above board, then later it's harder to say the election was stolen because they've seen it firsthand and they were involved in the process.
Yeah, and we have seen in the months leading up to this election threats to elected and Washington officials and their families. Earlier this year, a man was charged with attempting to assassinate Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And just last week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked with a hammer in his own home. Broadly speaking, how is the climate and threat level heading into the midterms changed?
Well, people are very concerned about political violence in this country. There's no way around it. I have heard from some election workers who are encountering less vitriol and sort of violent rhetoric than they did a year or two ago. Midterms don't inspire quite the same enthusiasm as presidential elections. But yeah, I mean, this political violence in this country is something that is causing quite a lot of alarm on the federal and state level.
As voters are fanning out across the country, what should they know? What should they be aware of heading to the polls?
Well, for people who are concerned about voter fraud, you know, Trump's own attorney general said there wasn't fraud on the sort of scale that would have affected the election. And we've seen state and federal investigations and audits reassure that Biden won. So, you know, that's obviously something to keep in mind for folks who are skeptical of the results. And, you know, for people who are worried about their safety, I would say, you know, the sort of thing we saw in Arizona where people were staking out ballot drop boxes is unusual. But that said, just a few isolated incidents like that can be enough to scare people and deter people. You know, despite the backdrop of threats and intimidation and burnout among election workers, the ones who remain in their jobs are doing everything they can to make this a safe and secure election. They are trying to protect poll workers by creating different hotlines and alert systems so they can report anything like a threat or intimidation. I think you're seeing election officials, Republicans included here, who are really committed to making sure people can vote and trying to make sure that poll workers are free of intimidation. So there are people in elections offices say, you know, do not worry, this is going to be a safe and secure election.
That's Wall Street Journal legal affairs reporter Jan Wolf. Jan, thank you so much.
No problem.
And finally, in the hybrid work era, group messaging apps like Slack are important for running the day-to-day. So missing important missives from coworkers and bosses could leave your team in the lurch. But the messaging app has caused frustrations for some users. Slack uses complex rules and settings to assess when you're at your desk and determines what messages you do and don't get notifications on. But sometimes a quick run for coffee could leave you out of the loop. A principal Slack engineer who worked on the app says it isn't perfect and tweeted that some things could use improvement. Our personal tech reporter, Dalvin Brown, has a couple of simple tips.
The best chance you have is to turn on push alerts on your phone. Therefore, if for whatever reason your computer is muted or you don't see the alert on your desktop, you're getting all of those feeds on your phone. And so if and when you do happen to look at it, you can easily see in your notification bar everything that you've received on Slack. But if you're concerned with notification overload on your smartphone, then simply setting yourself away on Slack will make it so that when you return to Slack, you see badges for all the messages that you missed.
Sounds like I better answer that. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.